Welcome to the Doubles Only Tennis Podcast, where you learn the best doubles strategies to improve your game and win more matches. I'm your host, Will Bocek. This podcast, my website, and my weekly newsletter all focus on the goal of better understanding the sport of doubles and helping players like you improve faster through actionable advice that you can use in your very next match. My goal is to provide the best doubles strategy resources in the world. And to do that, I study, analyze, and work with players at every level of the game, all the way up to the ATP and WTA tours. If you enjoy this podcast, I've created double strategy products that go even deeper if you want to take your doubles knowledge to the next level. At the end of this episode, I'll explain more about them, or if you want to learn more now, go to thetennistribe.com/products. Here's today's episode. You're about to hear my conversation with Demi Schuurs. Demi is the number 13 ranked WTA doubles player. She has 17 career titles and it has a career high ranking of number 7 in the world. And she's also one of my favorite players to watch. She has a very kind of old school doubles game style where she likes to get to the net, return and volley, serve and volley. So she's a lot of fun to watch if you've never watched her before. But in this conversation, we cover a wide range of topics. We cover strategy and tactics. We cover life on tour. We cover her partnership with Desiree Kravchuk, as well as her story growing up, including how she got into tennis and her really successful junior career. Demi is kind of unique because she's had a ton of success on the doubles court with a lot of different partners. So I ask her what her approach is when she is partnering up with someone new. So there's some good takeaways there. We also talk about returning a lot. She's one of the best returners on tour. I actually share my screen with her, show her a point where she returns and volleys successfully, and she breaks down what she did and kind of her thought process on that point. So check out the show notes so that you can get the link to that video as well and kind of follow along a bit. I also ask her a few questions from you. So some of you submitted questions through Instagram and Twitter. So we ask her any practice drills for volleys. We ask her what happens after tennis for her. Does she have plans post-career? Does doubles pay enough to not work post-pro career? So she answers that for us as well. We also ask her if it's easy or difficult to play against former partners and a lot more. So there's a ton in this conversation. It's a really fun one where you're going to get to know Demi, you're going to learn new tactics, and you're going to really get to understand what life is like on the Pro Doubles Tour. So without further delay, enjoy this wide-ranging conversation with one of my favorite players on tour, Demi Schuurs. Hey everyone, welcome to the show. Today we have number 13 doubles player on the WTA Tour with 17 career doubles titles, Demi Schuurs. Demi, welcome.
Hello.
So you just finished up grass court season at Wimbledon. What have you been up to since then over the past week or so? What do you do during this kind of transition time?
Actually, I was in the Netherlands. I got injured just before Wimbledon, so I have some rest, try to rehab, and yeah, now next week I will build up again in my practice and then prepare for the US swing and Montreal, of course. So yeah, I'm just enjoying my time a little bit with family and friends, and yeah, using the gym and waiting to be on court again.
Okay, so you're not even on the court right now, you're just trying to heal?
Yeah, I'm not on court right now. I'm doing my gym exercises, but I planned already a week of holidays anyways after Wimbledon, just mentally, something else. But yeah, now, yeah, I was not doing anything, just some gym.
Yeah. Okay. What did you injure?
I got injured in my back.
Oh, your back. Okay. Yeah. I think I saw on Instagram something about it. Cool. Okay. So you've got the hard court season coming up. I want to talk about that, but before we do, can you just share a little bit, maybe in 2 to 3 minutes, kind of your story, like how you got started in tennis and, to what led to your pro career and where you are now?
Yeah, I started when I was 3 years old. So my dad, he was a professional handball player. And he always makes the joke that a handball was too big to give to me, so he gave a handball. Okay. So I don't know if that's the reason why I started, but yeah, I was 3 years old, playing some tennis with my dad. And then when I was a little bit older, like 4, 5, 6 years, I was going with him before school, and I started some lessons. When I was 8 years old, my teacher told me, like, okay, I think you have a talent, but you have to go to a different tennis school with better quality. So then I actually moved to Belgium. The name of the tennis school is LTA. It's actually funny because usually that's in England, but now that's the name of the tennis school. And that's where I started when I was 8 years old. And right now I'm still with the same academy. Of course, I switched with coaches during the whole process, but that's where I started when I was 8 years old. And 12 years old, I started to play full time. So I didn't go much to school. I started to travel a little bit more, and I think that's where it all started. We went on tournaments with a big group of girls in Bangladesh, everything far away, to get some points to get into the European tournaments. And then I got better and better. Did well in juniors. In juniors, I already knew that doubles is more my game style than singles. And then in 2015, I decided to just focus for 3 months on doubles because I felt like it was tough to combine the two of them. Especially with the ranking. The ranking difference got bigger and bigger. And in those 3 months when I just focused on doubles, I think the second tournament I played was a WTA event in Katowice. Played with Isalim Bonaventure, and we won that title. And then the difference was even bigger. And I also realized, okay, I like doubles so much more than singles. And I just kept going and played just doubles. So, yeah, I think that was one of the best choices of my life. So happy that I decided to play doubles and just focus on doubles.
Mm-hmm. So I want to go back to 2011. So that year, you made the finals of all four junior Grand Slams. Is that right?
Yeah, that's right.
And then won the Australian Open and the US Open, and all with four different partners. So at that point, it seems pretty obvious you can make it in doubles. But then between 2011 and 2015, you're still playing some singles. So talk a little bit about that decision ultimately in 2015 and what was going on in those years, kind of managing both singles and doubles.
2011 was a unique year, I think. You said like four finals with four different partners, even had match point in Wimbledon, set point in French Open. So I was like close to all of them. But I still felt at that point it was too early to decide, okay, I just go for doubles. So I was still investing in my singles career as well. But it was very difficult, physical, to combine the two of them. So I kept going and kept going, but of course in my mind was like, okay, I think I'm better in doubles than in singles. And one point, actually, it's actually funny. I was in the store with my parents, and I wanted a new radio for my car. And I told them, like, hey, I want to have this radio. And they told me, so you better start earning some money yourself now. So try to earn some money, and then you can buy it. And then we played this WTA event, and that was maybe the first time I earned some money, like a nice amount of money. And that's where it actually started, that I didn't want to ask my parents to invest and invest and invest the whole time. And I felt like it was tough to try to earn my own money. I think it was more like, okay, I realized singles, it's going to be difficult to be at the top. And also like physical, but also like the quality of the game was so high. And I felt like I was not good enough. And I felt like in doubles, I was playing very well and I didn't even focus yet, like full on doubles. So mm-hmm. yeah, I was more like, okay, I don't want to invest anymore. Let's try to earn some money myself and start a different career and focus just on doubles. So it was more like a process, like still trying. I didn't want to give up. And at one point I had to make a decision.
Yeah. So do you think, I'm always curious. So obviously we have this huge prize money differential between singles and doubles. Do you think if that was a little bit more even, maybe you would have committed to doubles earlier? Because I'm trying to like, obviously I was never anywhere close to pro, but like if I could put myself in your shoes in 2011, I'm thinking, okay, I just made the finals and doubles of all four junior grand slams. Doubles makes more sense. But you look at that prize money differential and it's like, I've got to take a chance at singles because it's just such a higher payoff in the long run.
Yeah. I'm not sure if I would like make the decision earlier because I still had like the main reason in my mind mm-hmm. was like, I don't want to give up. Keep going till the last moment. And then, yeah, if you just focus on doubles and you win the second event, I think it's just a confirmation that that's the right choice. At that point, my parents were still supporting me and it was not like they told me you have to choose, but it was more like my own feeling. And of course, I talked with my parents and my team around me. What's the best choice? But I don't know. Maybe if the money was more equal, maybe I would. But I think at that point, I was not like so much focused on the money. It was more like, okay, let's give it a try. Because at that point, I realized, okay, singles, my best ranking was 512. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I think it was more like I realized that it was not good enough to be at the top in singles.
Right. Yeah. Maybe it kind of depends on the person. So we talked about 2011, all four Grand Slams with four different partners. Now you've made the WTA finals 4 or 5 years in a row with 4 or 5 different partners. What is it about your game that allows you to adapt to playing with different partners? Is it, do you feel like you have a unique approach or a unique game style, or just talk a little bit about your process for that.
I think I'm like an easy person to play with, just personality wise. I think I fit with a lot of girls and I can, yeah, I have a good match with a lot of girls. And I also think I have a unique game style, but that doesn't mean like I will match with everyone. But if you see the tour right now, I think there are just a few players that play the same game as I do. Mm-hmm. But I think it's still unique. You see most of the girls, you see, yeah, they play from the baseline. I still call it like it's more singles. Mm-hmm. But my game style is more like, yeah, going to the net as much as I can. I like to be at the net. So I think it's a different game than most of the girls. I would say that I think that's sort of the two reasons why I qualify with different girls. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So now you've played with Desiree Kravchuk for about a year and a half now. You're qualified last year. You're on pace to qualify this year. What makes Des a great partner?
She's a very nice person. That's so important for me. I can play with, with the best player in the world, and if that's not a good person, I will not get the maximum out of myself. So first of all, mm-hmm. that is a good person, and that helps me at least to grow and to get the maximum out of it. And then I think we have a good match. Like she's very good from the baseline. She's a lefty. She's serving well. I think it's just a good match. I can be dangerous at the net, but still, if I play my game and I'm coming into the net, I think Desiree is also good enough at the net and has good volleys. It's not like she's afraid of going back when I'm coming in. So mm-hmm. I think it's just personality-wise and tennis-wise, I think it's a good match.
If I asked Des what makes Demi a good doubles partner, what do you think she would say?
I think she started with my net game. I think she will say, I think I'm dangerous at the net. And if she's doing her job from the baseline, she knows I can be dangerous and I can take balls away and play with a lot of pressure. I think she would say, you have to ask her next time.
I will. I need to get her on the podcast and ask her these questions. So you've played, obviously we talked about, with a lot of different partners, some right-handed, Des is left-handed. How do you adjust your game playing with a lefty? Are there certain tactical or strategical things that you do differently when you're playing with a left-handed player?
Yes, it is a little bit different. First of all, I think you have to see who's playing on which side. Do you have two backhands in the middle? Do you have two forehands in the middle? Mm-hmm. But with my game style, I think it is different when I'm coming into the net. Right now, we have two forehand volleys in the middle, so you can leave a little bit more space between each other because, you have two forehand volleys. Mm-hmm. with a right-handed player, that's a little bit different, I would say. And I also think you can play a little bit. Yeah, it's just some different plays with a serve. Of course, it's different for opponents when they get a lefty serve. It's not what you usually get. So I think you can use it with a serve as well.
Yeah. So when you're in the ad court and you have those forehands in the middle with a lefty, you can kind of shift to your left a little more because she's able to cover that middle a little bit better than a right-handed partner.
Yeah, I would say that the difference, the distance between us is a little bit bigger than when I play with a right-handed player.
Got it. Yeah, that makes sense. Okay, so I want to talk about returns next because as you've seen, I use your returns as an example in a lot of my videos. So I want to share my screen. Let me see if this will work. And I want to see if you can kind of talk us through your process and your kind of approach for your return and volleys. Can you see this?
Yes. Yes, I saw the video. Okay. Okay. I think what I always do is I start quite close to the baseline, but when my opponent is tossing the ball and serving, I really step forward. So I'm like in the court. Of course, then you have to see if it's going to be forehand, where the ball is going. And I try to take the ball as early as I can. Why? Because then, of course, you take time away from your opponents. It's not that easy to poach for the net player at the other side. And I'm already far into the court. So when I'm coming to the net, it's not like the whole court is open. I cover already a lot of the court with my first few movements. So I think that's something that, I see it now as well. I just take the ball so early. I think some players are not used to it because my return is not really hard. No, it's more like I take it early. And then at the end, I try to place it well. Like this return is perfect deep in the court, so I would say that's my strength with the return, to take it early and go in. And for an opponent, I think it's a lot of pressure.
Yeah, that makes sense. One of the things I notice with your returns more, I think more than most people, is how much forward momentum you get. So you said you start kind of behind the baseline and then you take a big step forward. I think you take more space to do that than most players, maybe than anybody I've seen on the tour. Is that something you've always done, or is it something you've developed and you just found it works for you?
My intensity was always to go in. So I think it's something I always did in the past, but yeah, I think I developed a little bit more in taking more time away and taking more space to step in.
Yeah.
So if I compare to other players, I think there is maybe one like Garcia. She's really into the court, but she starts already into the court. She's like in the court, and then she makes a little step. And I think at the end, almost at the same place to hit the ball. The only difference is that I start more backward, but I step really like 1-2 meters into the court. Except she's staying there already. But I think it's something that's working for me for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds like it's probably just kind of a personal preference thing, and people have to decide what works best for them.
And it's funny because I played a few times with Kiki Bertens, and she's the opposite. She's like far from the, and it wasn't clay, far from the baseline. And she likes to stay back. And it was so funny. Like if you see the difference where, and that was in practice, we were just warming up the return, the difference between where she was staying and where I was hitting the ball return. It's so big, the difference. And then we were trying to do the opposite. So she was trying to do my style. I was trying to do her style. Yeah, that was not working.
That's funny. Did you have trouble with those returns when you were stepping way back?
I have to get used to it. I think I would sometimes actually on clay when maybe my return is a little bit off or someone is playing very good kick serves. I act like I go in because everyone thinks I'm going in, but then I go back. So I give myself a lot of time and I play a little bit higher back. But it's my is always to go in and take time away and play with pressure.
Sure. Yeah. So for people listening who want to implement the return and volley, it sounds like step forward, take it early. Don't focus on hitting the ball too hard, right? Just you've used your court position to take away time from the opponent. So you don't need to hit it hard and then hit it depth and use that momentum to get forward to the net. John from Instagram. So we posted on Instagram to see if anybody had questions for you. John asked, what is your approach or tactics returning against I formation? So how do you approach that?
I think it's something personal. I know some girls, they really know already in advance, okay, I'm going to go line or I'm going to return cross. Mm-hmm. I don't like to. Sometimes I do, but usually I just play with my feelings and intuition. So when they serve to me, I just choose like in a split of a second where I want to return. So that's something personal, I would say. Maybe most of the girls, they know already in advance, okay, I'm going to go line and cross and then the point starts. But you can, of course, take some things with you in your mind. Depends a little bit who you play. Usually with the girls, backhand volleys are less good, less powerful. So if you don't know where to go, it's always good to search for the backhand volley. Sometimes it's even good to chip the return because the net player is choosing a side. So yeah, you have different options. But to start with, I would say like first make a decision if you want to know already before the return, I want to go cross or line. Or if you just play with your feeling and decide at last minute. But yeah, you have to go with commitment, of course. Otherwise, the net player would take the ball away.
Yeah. Yeah, I think for me, a lot of the times, I think I'm more like you where I like to wait until I see the serve to decide. But sometimes I return from the ad court as well a lot. But sometimes I will decide before the point. If I get a forehand, I'm going line. If I get a backhand, I'm going cross. And that way, it's just a little bit easier return for me because I'm going across my body. And I prefer my backhand return cross. But you also mentioned the chip. Did you mean like a chip lob in that scenario?
Yeah, you can always go up. I don't do that often, but it's a good play. Especially with girls, I think if they play I formation and you can chip lob cross, usually you're on the backhand of the opponent. It's also, it depends a little bit who you're playing. Some girls, you know, okay, the baseline player, the backhand is better. So they probably take the cross away and she the line away, and she wants to have that backhand. So it depends a little bit who you play, and I think that's something just tactic wise you make a decision where you go. Sure. And strong middle ball, that works sometimes too.
Yeah, definitely.
Choosing a side.
Okay, so let's move on to net play. So Jack from Twitter asked, how are you so good at volleys? Do you have any practice drill recommendations? And how do you make such quick decisions?
When I was young, I did a lot of volley with my dad. We called it the woodies at that time. Just like volley the whole time. I couldn't even go. My eyes were under the net. I was that small, but I wanted to play volleys all day long. So that's something where it started already. I played soccer and I was goalkeeper. So I also think that's something that helped me a little bit with the reactions and taking balls away on court. And right now I do some practices for my eyes, just reaction practice with little lights or with balls on a 3D screen to practice the focus of the eyes. And I think those are just little things to practice. And that's something that, I think I get better as a person, just reaction-wise, focus-wise. But also I think it's something like one of the talents that I have in my net game. I'm not a baseline player, but I just like to be at the net. And I think, that's something that I will always do. And you will never see me staying back the whole match and hitting balls from the baseline. I just like to be at the net. And I think it's just something that I like and I can do well.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it's more fun to watch too. What did you say that you called the volleys back and forth with your dad?
The woodies. From the two players at that time.
Woodbridge. Oh, the woodies. Oh, okay. Yeah. Okay. Got it.
I don't know why we called it that. I think it was something that we heard and then we just did it as well.
Yeah, maybe they did that. So another thing that I've noticed watching you play is sometimes you will, especially on the deuce side, you'll serve from way out in the doubles alley. So talk about that a little bit, why you do it, how you decide when to do it.
Yes, I started doing that when I was working with Thorsten Peschke. I think he's very good in positioning on court. And he came up with that idea. I think it helps when maybe you're struggling with your serve. First of all, you give a different view to your opponents and they're maybe like, oh, what's going to happen? And on the juice side, it's just easier to make the angle wide. Mm-hmm. And some people, they start to cover the wide ball, but then you can jam them actually into the body backhand. So I think it's just like also a mental game. It makes it easier for me to play some plays like the wide serve and the backhand body. But from the other side, it's also a different view. And you're going to be sometimes in the head of the opponent. And they can start thinking, especially if they return well and you have some troubles with your serve. I think it's something good to mix up.
Yeah, it's good to give the opponent a different look for sure. Let's see. So how do you approach mixed doubles differently, if at all?
I think for sure it's different because the guys are playing so well. Usually the guy is the leader in the team. So far, I didn't do that well in mixed doubles. I think my best result was maybe quarters or semis once.
I think you made the semis in one of them. I was looking yesterday.
Yeah, one of the Grand Slams. Then we played Karatsev and Vesnina. I played with Wesley Kohov. Yeah, it is different. I feel like the guy is taking a lot of responsibility, and sometimes I think too much. They don't trust us enough. But it is different. You try to avoid the guy, and sometimes because you know the guy, the opponent take the responsibility. You think they're moving the whole time, so you're gonna play more line. It is different. Yeah, you try to play more to the girl, but sometimes it's also a mental game because you don't know what the guy's doing. Some of them are very active. Some of them they just take away a lot of space on the court, but they're not like really active. Mm-hmm. So it is. I think it is different.
Describe your ideal doubles partner.
I think I was playing very well with Ashley Barty. I know she's a good player in general, but
yeah,
she had something special. I didn't need to worry about anything else, just about my game. She just had a very easygoing attitude. I like that as well. And just her game style, she had a good serve. So I think that's something that is important for me, someone with a good serve. And mm-hmm. I think I need or someone who is very good from the baseline so I can do my job at the net, like Desiree, for example. Mm-hmm. But I think I can also match with someone who plays almost the same game style as I do. If someone is serving well but still coming in, very active at the net, I think then you get like a real, real doubles game. I think mm-hmm. that can work too.
Yeah. Yeah. It's something that you typically don't see both players doing. So I feel like it would be kind of a strategic advantage since most teams don't see both opponents getting to the net a lot. At least currently.
I call it a little bit more like man's doubles. And I like, mm-hmm. of course, I play with less power and it is still different, but I think the style that I'm playing is more like man's than woman's doubles.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Do you have any any doubles partners? This could be women's or mixed doubles. Any partners that you have never played with that you'd want to play with, like a dream doubles partner?
Oof. I think it would be nice to play mixed doubles with Nadal. Just because I like him and I have a lot of respect for him. Women's doubles, then I would say maybe in the past Serena. I think that because it's a legend.
Yeah.
I played her once in Fed Cup, but to play with her, I think that's something different. And I think I would say those two names.
Yeah. You should ask Nadal to play in the French Open next year.
I think he will save his energy.
Maybe. We'll see. Hopefully he's healthy for it. So a couple more listener questions and then a few rapid fire questions, and then we'll let you go here. Let's see. Hamlin asks, which opponents do you feel like you and Dez match up best against and worst against?
If I would say, like, for example, Pegula Golf, they're very good, one of the best teams. But I still think that we always play well against them and we always play a good match.
Mm-hmm.
And then I don't know, like, it's all for us and I think for everyone, it's just very difficult always to play against the Czech girls, Krejčíková, Siniaková.
Yeah.
I don't know, it's just a bad match. I think just they're just very good. I think they're a little bit better than all the rest if they play full.
Mm-hmm.
I think I would say Pegula Golf for sure. We always play a good match. It's always a high quality match from both sides, and we won already and we lost already, but I think that's always a good match.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember watching in the WTA finals last year. That was really
struggling a little bit there, but
and
we play them now in semis in Rome. Very close match, but quality is always good.
Mm-hmm. Pushkar asked, how easy or difficult is it to play against a former partner?
I think it depends a little bit how you, let's say, end the relationship. I have to say I'm always good with my ex-partners, and that's something that I also want to, because I don't like to have tension in general, because I see those people almost every week. I know for some girls it's not easy to play against an ex-doubles partner, but I think when I was younger it was not that easy. I always got very nervous, but right now I feel like it's just a match and everyone is trying to do their best and we have respect for each other, and I think that's it.
Jay asked, what happens after tennis? Does doubles pay enough to not work post-pro career? What's next for you?
If I still have to work, I don't know. It depends a little bit of my career, I think, and how long I want to play. My mindset is to play at least till 35 years, but we will see. Maybe it's going to be 34, maybe it's going to be 38. I have no idea. I just like the game and I have a lot of passion for the game. Mm-hmm. After tennis, I still want to be a coach, but I think I don't going to travel that much anymore. I'm a person who likes to be at home, likes to be with family. That's important for me as well. And maybe I want to be a Fed Cup captain or assistant captain. Maybe analyzing some doubles for TV. I think that's something that I'm going to do. Yeah, I like that.
Yeah, I think you'd be really good at that. So last listener question, this is not doubles related. Matt asked, what is your favorite kind of potato dish? Baked, boiled, mashed, or French fries?
Oh, wow.
I think he thought I wouldn't ask this, but I wanted to anyways.
Yeah. I like mashed potatoes, but I also like French fries sometimes, or sweet potato. I think that's something good as well.
Yeah.
So I like almost all the food. I just like to eat and but if I have to choose, I would say like when I eat sometimes French fries because it's still kind of special to eat it, I think that's my choice then.
Yeah, good choice. Okay, so the last few questions here from me. What is your favorite tennis book?
I don't read, actually. I don't like to read.
Yeah. Okay.
I had the book of Nadal, Agassi.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, more like those kind of things than
like biographies.
Yeah.
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 What's your favorite surface?
Grass. Yeah.
Grass.
I like it when it goes fast. But I have to say, in the last few years, I was always joking with my coach about clay, like, oh no, clay season is starting. But I think result-wise, maybe my best results are on clay now. I don't know. I'm like, I play well on every surface, I can say, but if I can choose, I choose grass.
Yeah. Yeah, y'all won Stuttgart twice in a row now.
Yeah,
That's funny. What is your favorite tournament?
I like Wimbledon for sure because it's just something unique, but I like to be in Australia. I just like the atmosphere. I like the people. They're always very friendly. When I wake up, it's good weather. I just like to be there. I think it's very nice. And I think Rome is very nice as well.
Okay. So that was my next question. What are your favorite cities to travel to? I guess Melbourne and Rome.
Of course, I related a little bit to tournaments. It always, it depends a little bit how you feel in a tournament, how you feel in the city, I would say. But I like Rome. I like Melbourne. I do like New York. It's kind of busy, but after tennis in the evenings to walk around, I think it's nice for those 2 weeks. I would go with those cities. Yeah.
What's a favorite meal you've had at a tournament?
You know, in Rome, there is like a very good Italian restaurant, and a lot of players are going there. So I would say, if I think about food and tournaments right now, I would go with Rome with the food, because on the tournament is already good, but in that restaurant, Taverna Trilussa, it calls, it's so good. It's unique to have that food.
What did you order this year?
Oh, I think I had a whole menu. I was with my coach and my mom, and we went there like 4 times in the whole week, and with Desiree as well. And we chose different pastas, and we were sharing. So I think I tried almost everything now, and they're all so good.
I think I've seen some pictures on Instagram of
Yes.
that. That's funny. Okay, so last question for you today. How do we make doubles more popular?
Yeah, good question. I think something we have to figure out, because I think a lot of people actually want doubles to be more popular, but I think we didn't find a way yet to get it more popular. And it's funny, because when you go to England, if you play Eastbourne or you play Wimbledon, people are so happy when they see doubles. Yeah, I think we just have to figure out how we get doubles more popular, because I think it's just like a specific sport, I would almost say. Sometimes I say like doubles is different sport than singles, because you see just different things for people on the court. I think it's more fun, more things are happening. If someone can tell me how to get doubles more popular, I will help.
We're working on it. Dimi, thank you so much for joining us today. I'm sure we'll do it again at some point, hopefully live, maybe in New York later this year.
Yeah, that would be nice to have a chat with you and Desiree, and I think that would be fun.
Let's set it up. Awesome. Thanks everyone for listening. I'll link to everything in the show notes, and I will talk to you all next week. Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the Doubles Only Podcast. If you're interested in diving deeper into any topics I discuss, I've created double strategy products that allow me to bring you more podcasts and other doubles content without relying on paid ads. I have ebooks and courses that help you make better strategic decisions during matches and become the smartest player on the court. Go to thetennistribe.com/products to learn more. You can also join my free weekly double strategy newsletter that includes video lessons and more on our homepage. If you want to connect, you can find me on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook, or email me directly, will@thetennistribe.com.